That is it full-scale production requirements, or is it an arm's length thing? Do we just simply, is it totally up to them as to how much is produced, and or do we have some say in that whole thing in accordance with the lease provisions?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a lot of say over the volumes that are produced. It's very important that some oil be produced, or the lease will terminate. But once you get beyond that point of having some production, we have very little authority through our lease to influence what goes on. We certainly can approach the Conservation Commission just as another party, any other party, and petition for a hearing. All royalty owners have that right in the state here.
Representative Brown.
Our lease implicitly, if not explicitly, requires that it not that the operators behave in a prudent manner, or that they make investments that a prudent operator would make to recover the resource, and that is a condition of their continuing to hold the lease.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, that's correct. And I think there's a lot of latitude in that statement, though.
In your opinion, what's a reasonable rate of return for a prudent operator?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, we've gone round and round with that analysis on royalty reduction requests in particular, and it's not easy. You can look to the utility law, for examples, the way pipelines are regulated or electric companies are regulated. You know, what's a reasonable rate of return for activity like that? You can look at treasury bills or other safe investments that are available. I'd hate to be pinned down today with an answer, but it's certainly above zero. But it's real difficult, because you look at, you know, should you invest in treasury bills as an alternative? Well, I don't think we want our lessees investing in treasury bills. We want them investing in oil and gas activity in Alaska. So there has to be some incentive there. But there has to be a ceiling, too. I don't want to duck the question, but it's just a real hard analysis to do. You know, in the case of royalty reduction requests, at the end of the life of a field, if we can do something that gets some more oil out, even if we benefit only very little from that increased activity, we have benefited some, and that's better than not benefiting at all. So it's tough. It really depends on the situation.
Have you used a number in decisions like the royalty reduction request? Is there some decision where you've said we think 10% is reasonable, 15%?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Brown, I think we used the Treasury bills as a marker.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Boyer. You indicated at one point when we were looking at the charts that there were things that you looked for coming online to give you a sense of, I mean, give you a particular perspective in your forecasting ability. Can you tell when a project or some kind of technique should be brought online but isn't being brought online, and how that would affect state policy? And I may not have stated that very, very well, but if you see a field and it's operating at a certain capacity and there isn't a stimulation, there isn't a water flood, there isn't gas, whatever that project might be, can you see those things and say, why not? Why is it that they aren't stimulating, or why is it that they aren't doing those things? And then what ability, if you can see those things, what abilities do we have to stimulate them to the oil companies or the producers to do those kinds of things?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, we do look at that, and it's, you know, through a number of different ways. We review the professional papers that are published, the engineering journals. To look for discussions just of enhanced oil recovery in general, and what type oil does this one process work best, or what temperature range, what pressure range, and then imagine how that might work at Prudhoe Bay, or if it could work at all. We look next door and see what the neighbors are doing. I think that's one of the benefits of having some different producers on the North Slope, to look and see what Conoco's doing, or what the Kuparuk owners are doing, or what's going on out at Endicott. Kind of see what the neighbors are up to, see what's working best over there. And look at other oil fields, certainly in the United States, what kind of new projects are going in. Usually any kind of big project gets covered in things like the Oil and Gas Journal. You know, there's usually write-ups, you know, in that sense. We don't have the mathematical model or the simulation model to sit back and year after year run these what-ifs and study infill drilling or changes in the pattern design of the injection wells. We don't have that ability right now. But we do what we can to keep up with current technology.
It seems like we'd like to have more of that ability. I mean, for no other reason than the issue of the pipeline and shutting in of oil. If we saw, I mean, for, I hate thinking too much forward about West Sac and other new production or heavy oil production, but it seems to me at some point we ought to be stimulating the development of technology that may or may not exist anywhere in the world for the development of that resource, and at some point there's a crossover line where the closing down of that pipeline has an economic value. So if maybe it does cost $8 a barrel to lift that oil, maybe it costs $10 a barrel to lift that oil, but closing down that pipeline has some value as well, and in the sense that it's a market opportunity missed, and so you could probably call that a subsidy, if you will. Let's just, you know, with a mindset and say, we're not going to miss that, whatever X is, maybe X is $3 a barrel, stuff left in the ground, cost of not being able to run anything through the line, let's move it over and tack it onto the $8 a barrel or whatever that West Sac cost and call that a subsidy to keep the oil flowing through the pipeline as some kind of incentive. And I haven't thought that through very much, but it seems like we ought to look for those kind of opportunities as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, I think the Department of Energy did an excellent study in that same respect. You know, they looked at the North Slope, at the transportation system, and the fields that feed into that transportation system, and did some of those what-if type questions, and they used some of that analysis to support opening ANWR. But then it was also done just to look at what's going to happen to domestic production and what's going to happen to the pipeline. And there are real causes and effects up there, and you can capture some benefits that aren't so obvious from just, you know, looking at the numbers from the outside first glance, that you can piggyback on some of this stuff and capture that oil before the pipeline might shut down. Because it's going to happen sometime out there in the future, and you want to get the most benefit you can before that happens. I hope it's well away many, many years from now, but it's something that you have to think about in the real long term, 30, 50 years from now. But if you're planning to bring a field online 30 or 50 years from now, you know,
you have to have the transportation.
You're going to have to do something different.
Thank you.
Senator Cott.
Yeah, along those lines, what about Point McIntyre? Like, I mean, we're all kind of reading the papers and seeing BP and ARCO apparently fighting about that or having a disagreement as to whether that ought to be developed or how soon it ought to be developed. And I suppose there can be a point when it's too late. Hopefully we're not anywhere near that. What are you willing to tell us about that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cotton, from what I understand, the owners have not agreed on who owns what. Excuse me, who owns what share of Point McIntyre? But I think they were meeting this week again and last week to try to resolve that, because there are some funding windows that they have to meet in order to start production and get that equipment ordered. We're not anywhere near that hurdle point of Point McIntyre, you know, worrying about pipeline capacity. But I think it's taken longer than I think they originally expected to determine equity and ownership. And I think, as you're aware, Point McIntyre is going to be produced through the Lisburn oil production facility, so there's a production sharing agreement that has to be written. There's excess capacity at the Lisburn facility, and that facility will be used to process the Point McIntyre oil.
Is that the only problem that you see, is a dispute over who owns what? I guess what I'm getting to is it Department of Natural Resources or the Division of Oil and Gas acting as a referee at all there? Are you trying to help them resolve that difference?
Mr. Chairman, not right now. I guess if it drags on a lot longer, maybe we'd go to the commission with some kind of petition. I don't know. I guess that's an option. We haven't really thought about that yet. Hopefully, I mean, it's in the producer's interest to get that online too. So,
is that really the only problem, is a dispute over ownership?
It's the only one that I'm aware of.
Representative Hudson.
Back on West Sac a little bit here. I'm wondering what effect the production of that oil bears on what I read at any rate, is that it would be subject to the tax mechanism of Kuparuk, which when we eliminated the ELF here a couple of years back, I have read in the papers at any rate that some of the producers have said that essentially what you've done is thrown the production of West Sac oil into the more taxed Kuparuk field production zone. And I wonder if that's been resolved or what the effect of that is.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's resolved in writing for West Sac, but that's only because, that's my knowledge, because the request has never been submitted. Similar situations exist at Endicott. There's a separate small reservoir called Sag Delta out there that's being produced simultaneously with the Endicott Reservoir, and they're processed through the same production facility. They're taxed as two separate properties, so there's that problem does not exist at Endicott. Same is true at Milne Point. The same will be true for Point McIntyre, Lisburn, and Nyakuk when those three fields all produce through the Lisburn facility, that they'll be taxed separately, not as one field. And I foresee that's what will happen at West Sac also.
Well, I guess what I'm getting to, Bill, is it in the state's best interest for us to contemplate that or to take that in consideration in the tax laws that are currently on the books? That was one of the big questions when we, debated the ELF, was whether or not it might negatively affect some of the production of the peripheral fuels. And I'm wondering if we need to change that somewhat in order to get to the West Sac and some of these other fields.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly agree that was a concern at the time. I think that concern, from my view anyway, that's not a concern anymore. You should certainly ask the producers that question if it is still a concern to them. But I don't think it is.
Representative Boyer.
It's hard to know whether or not their concern is real if you don't know what the return of or the rate of return is. I mean, that was always part of the difficulty, is appreciating when it appears that there's an export of cash to foreign countries for development of what it must be cheaper oil. And it's tough to know what you can do to keep them doing their business in Alaska instead of exporting dollars to Colombia or wherever it might be going. I mean, so there, how do we help ourselves make those kinds of decisions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, I guess if you're interested in constructing an economic model for one of these fields, we could help you. It'll be hypothetical, certainly, but I think the Department of Revenue did that same thing last year in the tax study with Gaffney Klein and Professor Alex Kemp when they did a joint, I can't remember the title of it, a joint legislative administrative study on Alaska tax policy 2 years ago, maybe.
Most of us compare taxes in Alaska versus Indonesia and other, and North Sea, but I didn't remember that. Probably just don't remember that they did any production models. Mostly it was laying crude oil underneath the tax structure in Great Britain, Norway, mm-hmm. Indonesia, right. And so forth.
That's correct. I think there were five fields studied, and there was an economic model built for each field. That information may be in there in the form that, already in the form that you could use.
What's the lifting cost at Prudhoe Bay? I mean, kind of a generic average or an average lifting cost in that reservoir.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know what it is in Prudhoe Bay right now. I know there were some numbers in that economic model, and I just can't remember what they were.
It's less than $4 or $5 a barrel.
I would think so.
And at Anwar, what was it projected? With all the capital infrastructure that would have needed to be put in place, what were we selling Congress?
I can't remember the number right now, but it's in the EIS. The EIS had at least a pretty good list of assumptions used in the modeling done for Anwar. So.
But it was apparently less than $4 or $5 a barrel?
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
It was probably pretty high.
If it's more than $5 a barrel and less than $8 a barrel, and now that Anwar may not be available, Does it make sense then to focus on Agnew and West Sac? If that's developable at $5 to $8 a barrel? And I don't, you mean to use those figures, Mike kind of admonished us against that anyway, but if it's more than five, it's less than 8 or 10, and Anwar is not available to us, and that's a 40 billion barrel resource combined or something in that neighborhood is what I've heard battered around. Are we going to, I mean, it makes sense that we focus there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, I think I probably misled you somewhere along the way, because when I think of lifting costs, I don't include things like production facilities and those sorts of things that are going to be shared for West Sac or shared for Schrader Bluff. You know, if you look at Anwar, you're going to have to build the whole field, whereas at West Sac, you have a lot of facilities already built. So we may be talking apples and oranges on some of these numbers, and I apologize if I did that.
But now it sounds like it's actually cheaper. It would be cheaper to lift West Sac than it would have been, perhaps, to develop Anwar on a kind of per barrel cost.
That's correct. You would have a lot less capital investment in heaters and treaters and those kind of production facilities. You're probably going to have a lot more wells and drill sites. So they may end up balancing out at the end. I think you just need to look at the models, and the Anwar numbers are available in the EIS.
If there are no further questions, I'd like to thank the Oil and Gas Committee members and Finance Committee members and Senator Cotton for attending the meeting today and other interested legislators who joined us. Without objection, meeting is adjourned.